Keep those dice rolling, Gamer Nation. This is GM Dave, host of Order 66, the Holocron, and Geekapalooza, and I, like you, am a Game On minion.
D20 Radio, your gamers roll. www.d20radio.com.
Game on.
Here it is, Gamer Nation, Episode 8 of Game On. Look, Ma! No hands! Greetings, Gamer Nation. It is me. That's who I am. Brian, known as Fiddleback on the forums. With me today, as per usual, is the world's tallest midget, Andy.
That's right, Gamer Nation. I'm not short. I'm fun-sized.
Oh, dear. we're off to a rolling start already.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. What are we talking about today, Andy?
Today, dice culture.
Dice culture.
Yes, we've got the, you know, the Aboriginal dice, and you've got the American Indian dice, and then you've got the third world countries, and oh no, not that kind of dice culture.
I kind of like it, though. We could go with that if you wanted to.
We could. We could probably run for something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not, though.
Upkeep phase.
Well, first off in our upkeep phase, a big thanks to GM Dave for providing us this this show's opening bumper, provided mere moments before we began recording.
Yes, he just showed up out of nowhere as if by magic.
That's right. He's got that force speed thing going on. It looks like he's not there, but he just right there all of a sudden.
He just pops in, saves the day.
That's right. Beautiful. Thanks, Dave. We appreciate it. Also, thanks go out today to Darth, and boy, do we have a name here, Darth Korihor. Korihor? Cory?
There isn't a 10-foot pole long enough to touch that name. Nope. It's all yours.
Anyway, thanks go out to Darth K for his very kind 4-star rating on iTunes. We appreciate your input and want to encourage the rest of Gamer Nation to head over to iTunes and provide some ratings feedback for the show as well. Be honest, of course. We're real men, and we can take it. A confluence of time and space has rendered a touch of quiet around the network this week, but here's what went live as of, well, now.
Meanwhile, this Super Gaming podcast sees Mostly Joe, perhaps you've heard of him, interviewing Sean Punch of Steve Jackson Games. Tune in and hear the discussion about GURPS and the Power Book, plus a lot more. Meanwhile, they make the spandex fit.
Wow, that was easy. To all the shows that didn't produce an episode, we can only say, we're catching you. To help us taunt these shows, or check in and find out what's going on with them, head over to www.d20radio.com and take a look at the community forums.
Bits and pieces.
Well, it's time for a bit of news, various pieces of information from around the gaming world, Gamer Nation. Let's see what's going on out there.
Well, at the London and Nuremberg Toy Fairs, LEGO showed off a series of board games aimed at players ages 5 to 10 that allow the players to build the board in different ways before playing the game. Now, for those heavily into games, the idea of a modular game board won't be a big deal. But the idea has received coverage in the UK Telegraph, complete with the following quotes. Peter Jenkinson, editor of the website Toyology, said, "Whilst most major board game manufacturers concentrate on revamping aging titles, LEGO once again show their strength by breaking the mold. They have invented something completely new, and that rarely happens in the world of toys. Clearly a man unused to hyperbole." LEGO also won a Toy Award 2009 at something international in Spielwarenmesse.
Bless you.
Yeah, thanks. In Nuremberg, in the category of Play in Action, for its Ramses Pyramid. Other titles in the series will include Lava Dragon, Minotaurus, Lunar Command, and Pirate Code. As noted in a press release on the LEGO website, game designer Rainer Knizia is responsible for the design of these games, which will debut in August 2009 in Europe, and retail for 10 to 35 pounds, no, euros, pounds, euros. You know what? You people need to get organized over there.
Pick a denomination and stick with it.
The U.S. division of LEGO has said that these games will not be released in the U.S. at this time. To the U.S. division of LEGO, I say, you folks are idiots.
Yes, because combining LEGOs with a board game is just too cool.
I know. I'm going to buy them all.
Yeah, if we can find them.
Mm-hmm. They'll be here eventually.
Eventually. NG International, formerly Nexus Games, has announced a dozen new game sets, expansions, and miniatures-related items for the Wings of War series in 2009. Here's how the releases break down. For the World War I line, Flight of the Giants, a new game set due out in August, will introduce early bombers and require any other box set in order to play. Hit and Run and Crossfire are booster packs due in December that will add new aircraft such as the Spod 7, I believe that is?
Yeah, that's a 7, VII.
I don't read Roman. and the Aviatic DI for the former, and the Bristol Fighter and Rumpler, I knew her. For the latter. Along their maneuver decks. Wow.
Yeah.
Now I know why you gave this to me.
That's right. Comedy gold.
For the World War II line, Fire in the Sky is a new game set due out in May that will new planes.
Let's pretend the word have occurs in that sentence
we'll
somewhere.
Have or add, yes. We'll add new planes and dive bombers, such as the Junker Ju-87, two squadron packs, the last biplane, and Revolution in the Skies are due out in August. For the miniatures line, May 2009 will see the release of the first series of World War II miniatures, such as the Grumman F4 and the Mitsubishi A6M2-0. Can't wait. In individual packs with multiple painting schemes, the Wings of War World War II Miniatures Deluxe set is due in July, the World War I Orientated Balloon Busters expansion pack in September, a second series of World War II airplane packs in October, and Series 4 of the World War I airplane packs in December.
Wow. That's a lot.
I gotta take a break. For miscellaneous uses, the first item to be released will actually be the Wings of War game mat. Awesome. A four-color foam gaming surface measuring 68 by 98 centimeters. That's 27 inches by 39 inches for those of us that live in the United States and refuse to convert to metric. That's available in both East and West sections. The Wings of War series is available in 10 languages from nearly as many publishers. English from Fantasy Flight Games, Greek from Kaisa,
sure,
Czech from Corfix, etc. And it's not clear from the NG International press release whether all items will be released in all languages. Not that language is ever restriction for hardy gamers.
That's right.
Like us.
That's right. And you know what that press release tells me? That press release tells me I'm going to be broke in August. I'm going to be broke in May. I'm going to be broke in July.
September, December. Yeah, it's a downward spiral. It's a SPAD 7 that's been shot down. So.
Yep.
But I look forward to it. It sounds like a lot of cool stuff coming out.
That's going
to
be really cool, yeah. The War Gods of Aegyptus 2nd Edition softcover rulebook is now available for pre-order from the Crocs online store. The War Gods rulebook is a lavishly illustrated 288-page softcover manual with a 32-page color section and 2 sheets of command counters. The reprint is scheduled, and the books are due to ship in mid-March 2009. This printing is an updated version of the 2nd Edition rules, with the latest errata and rules updates added into the text. More information is available at www.crocodilegames.com. For those of you not familiar with it, War Gods of Aegyptus... it's going to be a long show, Andy.
Trip over your alligator, did you?
I did. I did.
Crocodile, sorry.
Yep, crocodile, alligator. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Toothy.
Toothy, indeed. Amphibious.
You can make boots if you're fast enough. For those of you not familiar with the War Gods of Aegyptus, it's a miniatures game featuring sort of mythological Egyptian armies, featuring like Anubai and crocodiles and ibexes and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty neat game. Some of the miniatures are very nice.
Oh yes, yes indeed.
Very, very nice. I'm particularly a fan of the Bastille, but I can't imagine why.
Large-breasted women. With cat heads. Yes.
With cat heads.
There you go.
It's all anime related, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Head on over to board. Yeah, here we go. Wow, you just handed the ball right off to me and I fumbled. Head over to www.boardgamernews. No, that's boardgamenews.com.
Jeez.
Oh my God. See, we have an audience tonight, and it's
Gamer Nation. I would like to advertise heavily for Mike's Hard Berry Lemonade, featuring the flavors of whatever this is flavored like, cranberry. I'm checking here, 5% alcohol by volume. So we really have no excuse, but we're trying to create one.
Yes, and by volume they mean we've drank several so far. But anyways,
well, you have.
Oh well, you know. I'm only on my second one. I'm a cheap date.
Mm-hmm. But you ain't easy.
Lucky for you.
Yeah.
Also, www.gamingreport.com and the newest, latest, and greatest in web news, www.robotviking.com for more details and other news from the world of tabletop games.
Say, I'm looking for some sort of abstract strategy game, something with possibly parasitic conflict or bidding and economics, something with majority control and mass marketing, min-maxing that'll make people want to run away in fear and not play anything other than rock, paper, scissors. Have you got anything like that?
What the heck did he just say?
Gather round, boys and girls of Gamer Nation. It's time to learn a little something new. When you're sailing the uncharted waters of the gaming sea, keep your hands inside the boat and use these handy little terms to keep the wind in your sails.
Dice. Noun. Small cubes of plastic, ivory, bone, or wood, marked on each side with 1 to 6 spots, or pips as they are commonly referred to, usually used in pairs, in games of chance, or in gambling.
Polyhedral. Adjective. A three-dimensional geometric figure whose sides are polygons. A tetrahedron, for example, is a polyhedron having 4 triangular sides.
Have another drink.
I'm not even into this one. This is like, I'm only like 4 sips into this bad boy.
It's good stuff. Drinking it just as fast as I can.
Wait a minute here. Maybe this will help. Hang on. A little lubrication. Never hurt anything. A regular polyhedron is a polyhedron whose faces are all congruent regular polygons. The regular tetrahedron, pyramid, hexahedron, cube, octahedron, dodecahedron, and icosahedron are the 5 regular polyhedrons. Regular polyhedrons are a type of Archimedean solid.
Wow.
Hey, it worked. Yeah, it's interesting that the definition of dice itself is specifically small cubes.
Yeah.
What as any gamer can tell you, the small cubes are probably the least interesting of the things called dice. D20, 20-siders. Hey, I got an idea.
What's that?
Let's talk about dice.
Okay.
Hey, Andy.
Yes?
What's the one essential piece of equipment that every adventurer must have, no matter what game you're playing, what system you're playing, or, you know, what you're doing?
A highly polished cod piece.
Okay, what's the second thing that's most important? If I can't see my face in it... Oh, wait a minute. That's not how you wear that. What's wrong with his forehead? He dressed himself this morning. I don't know.
That would be dice.
Correct, sir. Congratulations. If you're a new gamer, one of the things you really have to get a hold of is a good set of dice. And any gamer worth his salt usually has more than one pair, but we'll just get you into your first set. When you go to your favorite local game store, or friendly local game store, or pertinent local game store...
As the case may be.
Yeah. You will generally have the choice of two different manufacturers of dice, one of which is Chessex, one of which is Koplow. It doesn't really matter which one of these you choose, because, in general, the quality of their dice is about the same. You can get all wigged out over precision and total randomness and all that. It's not going to matter. You're not going to roll those dice enough to have to worry about how accurate they are. Ever. Trust me on this one.
Because at some point, the dice will hate you.
Yeah. And you'll see a variety of styles and colors and designs and all sorts of things. And as a couple of general recommendations, basically what you want to get is a set of dice, first off, that you're going to like to roll, because you're going to be with them for a while. And you're going to want to get some that stay away from the rounded corners and edges. And there's a pretty good reason for this. If you roll a die that has rounded edges and corners, that thing isn't going to stop anytime soon. And the ultimate demonstration of this is if you happen to get a hold of an actual 100-sided die...
that rolls forever.
Yeah, you've essentially lengthened the time of play of whatever game it is you're playing by about an hour, waiting for this thing to stop rolling. Go with nice, sharp corners and edges... it helps the die to stop rolling quicker, and actually, there is a school of thought that says that it makes it actually more random, because they tend to jump up off of those corners and bounce around a little more.
Right.
And really, that's the basics of buying a good set of dice. Find some that you like, and find some that have sharp corners. You're going to want, especially if you're role-playing, you're going to want D4s, D6s, D10s, D12s, and D8s and D20s. You'll probably use some of those a lot more than you'll use others of those, but it's nice to have the full spectrum there. And you'll find, like I said, you'll find a variety of colors. You'll find clear dice. You'll find porcelain-style dice. You'll find dice that have blotches on them. You'll find dice that are striped. You'll find dice... Dices? You'll find dice that are... Dice is the plural, boys and girls. Data? Datum. Anyway. There's a variety of choices here, and the generally the fancier the dice are to look at, the more they're going to cost you. So if you're looking for just an inexpensive set, get the clear dice. They roll just as well as all the rest. It doesn't make a bit of difference what they look like, really.
It comes down to what you enjoy having.
Right.
It's you know, whether they're just a cheap $5 set of dice, or, you know, you go whole hog and spend $50 on a set of dice, or more in some cases. They're still dice in the end, and that's what you need them for, is to roll and generate random numbers for your stats and for the game.
Right. Just by way of example of the variety of dice you can find, I happen to have, here in my hot little hands, you can hear it rattling around, my dice box. This is a converted fishing lure box that holds my various sets. Here, let me rattle it for you so you can hear them.
Hey, that sounds like dice.
That sounds like dice. That's because it is dice. I think I mentioned that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In this thing, I have... Let me see here if I can remember the various names of these. I have porcelain dice, which are painted up in such a way that they look like they might be made out of porcelain, even though they're made out of plastic. I have some speckled dice. I have some dice with swirls on them. I have some what they were called ice cream dice at the time because they looked like they're swirled up ice cream. I have an entire selection of just random solid color D20s that came with various games that I have purchased over the years. I have some casino style six-siders. I have some various other types. I even have an old mud die from an original set of D&D, which is, you know, a little worse for wear. It's a little rounded off here and there. Oh, and I have a set of the official D&D role-playing dice, which are almost entirely useless, except that I like to roll my characters with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't roll well for anything else.
No, and because they are official D&D role-playing dice, you're going to pay about $13 for them.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous because they are the most plain-looking dice you have ever seen.
They really are. You can get a really nice set of Chessex for about $9 or $10,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then sort of the crowning achievement of my dice collection are the aircraft aluminum dice that I have, which I don't know if I can demonstrate this in here without breaking something. But they're like the heaviest frickin' dice you will ever hear. This is the D20 hitting the table out here. There you go. That's what it sounds like.
Nice and solid.
Oh, yeah. So solid, in fact, that they tend to not so much roll as land.
Yeah. They pretty much stick themselves into the table.
Yep. I got a couple of giant six-siders, and I have... From way back in the day, let me see if I can pull it out here, the Luzaki 100-sided golf ball.
Yeah, with the steel shot inside
to slow it down.
Help it make its number generation.
Yeah, it's all about slowing it down.
Yeah, two 10-siders works real good for that, kids.
Yep, probably the best investment you'll make for 100-sided die rolling ever, two 10-siders. Yeah, this is just ridiculous. I never use it for anything serious. Oh, and I got... Hey, that's right. That reminds me. I've got some six-siders that you brought me back from... what was it?
KublaCon.
KublaCon, yeah.
Random dungeon generator dice.
Yeah, they're just like normal six-siders. They've got a number on each face. But in addition to that, they each have a little dungeon room. So you take a handful of them, you throw them out, and then you stick them together, and that becomes your random dungeon. Hallways and rooms and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I thought those were kind of cool. So.
Yeah, they're very cool. I liked them.
They also make some for a very random character generation.
Oh, yes.
You roll a die and it tells you what race you are and what you're going to be and what you're going to do and mm-hmm. your background and things like that. So you can really get random on things like that. It doesn't always work real well, but it can be interesting.
Right. And come to think of it, I've also got a set of crystal cast barrel dice.
They're interesting to look at, but I don't like the way they roll.
Yeah, that's about the size of it too. Is they look great? They look very interesting. They have interesting shapes to them. They're not regular sided dice, but they tend to. They're almost as bad as a 100-sider in some cases because they just
they tend to roll off the table quite a bit.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a variety of dice out there for you to get. For your first set, just get something simple, something that works, and something that you like to roll. And really, there's no need for you to pay more than about $8 for a set of dice. So let's say for a moment that you're, one of those impoverished gamers, and you need to somehow save money on this whole dice buying thing. That's where we come up with the concept of borrowing dice. Andy, do you recommend borrowing dice?
As a last resort, yes.
As a last resort, yes. I recommend it as the very last resort. Like, you're going to die if you don't have some dice to roll. Because I'll tell you right now, in dice culture, there are good dice and there are bad dice. Regardless of whether they might actually be good or bad, the person who owns them will believe that some of his dice are good and some of his dice are bad. You will not be borrowing his good dice.
And if you do, you'll come back a finger or two short.
Right. You will be borrowing his bad dice, or what he considers to be his bad dice.
Yes.
And I do have to say that generally the particular person in question believes they are bad dice for very good reasons. They do tend to crap out on him more than the other dice seem to. So you're going to have to deal with that. And if you somehow manage to roll those borrowed dice and make them look good, he's going to be a little upset.
Yeah, he's going to want them back miraculously.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what happens to me. In the course of a game, I'll pick through dice that aren't rolling as well as I like, and I'll kind of push them off to the side and mock them. Mm-hmm. And somebody else will, let me roll it. And, you know, they'll roll a 20 first shot. And,
right.
You know, usually they catch it in the forehead after that. So
yeah.
Jerk.
So you can borrow dice. Just be aware you may not be getting the best dice in the world.
One way of picking up a cheap or inexpensive dice, however you want to term it, go down to your game store, and if they've got a large selection of dice, my store had it, I believe yours did, one of the other local game stores down here, had just literally buckets of random dice that you could pick through and put a set together. They may not all match, and they don't have to, but you can really pick up a lot of dice very cheaply.
Yeah.
You know, usually like a quarter a piece, you know, maybe 50 cents for a die 20, if that.
That's what I sold mine for, was a quarter a pop, and it didn't matter what size they were or what face.
Yeah. I would order in, you know, 1 or 2 pounds of dice, you know, every couple of weeks from Chessex, and people would just, you know, they'd go right out the door because people loved it. Oh, God, it's a quarter. I need more dice because gamers never have enough dice, it seems like.
Right. One thing to be aware of, though, when you're buying the bucket of dice or the pound of dice or the bag of dice or whatever, is those are generally the cast-offs. They've been rejected for one reason or another from their main product line. Maybe the numbers didn't print right, maybe they're slightly misshapen, maybe they've, you know, got some other defect or whatever, they're not balanced properly or some such thing. So you need to be aware of that. It can go... And like I said before, you generally won't notice that a die is particularly unrandom, because you're not going to be rolling it enough. I mean, we're talking the probabilities and that kind of stuff that affect a die and what it lands and all that really don't come into play until you're talking like 10,000 rolls. You're not seeing the full range of probability when you roll a die 1 or 2 times. You know, it might seem like you're not getting a 20 as often as you should, or a 1 comes up too often. But you really need a huge sample in order to appreciate whether or not a die is fair or not.
Yeah, I always got a kick out of that. People would come in and buy the dice for a quarter, and they would stand there at the counter and roll handfuls of dice and pick through the ones they thought were rolling better for them. So.
which brings us to kind of the next little subtopic here, dice luck. Dice don't care about luck. They're random number generators, really. You will believe that a certain die or a certain combination of dice will be luckier for you or work better for you, and that's fine. You're allowed to believe that. That's great. But be aware, that's not really true. A lot of times, and I'm a victim of this, too. I'll be playing a game, and my D20 will offend me. And so it will take a short, brief, sharp trip across the room. I will eject it from the table and switch to a different one. And it's not really anything to do with the die, it's more just with my perception of how the die is behaving. And so there's dice luck, and then there's dice luck, which is a totally different thing. If you got a lucky set of dice, you're going to take care of them, you're going to set them aside special. These are my lucky dice, nobody comes near them. You know, that's what you do everything with. I know a guy who had a set of, I think they were gold and black role-playing dice, you know, the full spectrum there.
Mm-hmm.
If you even looked at his dice for too long, in his estimation, he would pick them up off the table, put them away in his bag, and declare them unfit for play. I don't know if he thought you were wearing the numbers off of him with your eyeballs or what, but yeah, he was very sensitive about his dice.
Putting the mojo on him.
Yeah. So dice luck is kind of an imaginary factor that many people believe their dice have, but doesn't actually exist. And I can prove this because I have never once owned a pair of lucky dice. Ever.
I don't think I have either. They will all equally betray you.
That's right. All my dice are unlucky.
Yeah. It's just a matter of what degree of unluck they are generating at the time you're rolling them.
Very rarely do I have the number I want when I want it. And it just doesn't work that way.
In fact, I ran into a gamer at KublaCon a while back, and we got to talking about dice, and he has in his dice bag dice that have failed to perform for him. He'll take them home and crush them with a hammer.
Awesome.
throw their broken shards back into the dice bag to teach the other dice a lesson.
Yes.
As to, this is what will happen if you do not perform for me. So, needless to say, he's got a lot of broken dice. Which is great for the dice manufacturers, because they'll just keep making them because he'll keep buying them.
Yeah. I have on occasion had a very serious talk with some of my dice. Usually along the lines of, if you bastards don't start rolling better, you're going into fire. And you know, surprisingly, they listen. And roll better. Not really. Not really. Because they're random, they run in streaks, okay? Sometimes you'll see a lot of high numbers, sometimes you'll see a lot of low numbers, sometimes you'll see something in the middle or some combination thereof. It's probability and randomness. It doesn't really matter whether your dice are lucky or not, or whether you think they are or not. You're going to get random numbers. That's the point of the thing.
People will they'll get into a mindset that, you know, yeah, these are my lucky dice, and, you know, nobody else can touch them. And, yeah, I've seen people, you know, neat dice, and you'll pick them up, and they're like, oh, my God, you touched my dice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad thing. So some people tend to try to correct the randomness in what might be termed unsportsmanlike ways, shall we say. Let's take a case example here. We had a fellow who used to be in our role-playing group who, when he rolled dice, you had approximately 3/10 of a second to try to figure out what number he rolled.
Yeah, because it hadn't even come to a rest, and he'd already picked it up. Oh, look, I got a 20.
Yeah, yeah. This man had, or would have you believe he had, extremely lucky dice. That 20 was there every time he needed it. Now, if you believe that, then you are a prime candidate for having this happen at your table.
And I've got some beachfront property that I'd like to sell you.
Yeah. Cheating with dice is not cool, folks. And there are a number of ways to do this. There's the quick roll, where the dice comes out of your hand, and before it's hit the table, you're already reaching for it to grab it up off of there, and then you claim whatever number you want to claim. Somebody asked to look at the dice, and you've already picked it up, of course, so you couldn't possibly have been, you know, lying, shall we say? There are actually, in fact, cheater dice that are manufactured by both the companies we mentioned, Chessex and Coplow. Probably the most obvious of the cheater dice are the ones that have multiple occurrences of a given number. In fact, I think it's ChessX that sells character builder dice.
Yes, they all roll sixes.
Yes, they all roll sixes. Because on at least two faces there are sixes. Six occurs twice on the dice.
Yeah.
There are dice that are weighted to always come up certain numbers. There are dice that are shaved, dice that are... And these are purely mechanical means of having cheater dice. There's no reason in the world for you to ever buy cheater dice. I swear, if you cannot play the game and create your characters and make the rolls without having to have some sort of cheater dice, maybe this game isn't for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're so locked into the mindset that you have to win, you have to have the best of everything, please don't play at my table. I don't want you.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the guys that played Warhammer at my store for many years and before we had our store had very, very poor dice luck. We went so far as to buy him loaded D6s, and he still couldn't roll sixes with them.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't matter. Even if your dice are loaded, they'll still hate you at some point.
Yeah. Okay, so the mechanical means are as we described, and then there's, like, the quick roll. There's the roll that goes deliberately under something. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll roll the dice, and it'll go underneath a page of a book, and you'll look, and you'll see it's a 3, and you'll say, oh, it's 13. This one doesn't work very well with people who are not willing to believe you at your word, because they will insist on seeing it. Other methods of dice cheating, claiming 9s or 6s. Or 6s or 9s, depending on what you need. One of the ways that this doesn't apply so much anymore, one of the ways that used to be done with the old mud dice was, because they were mud dice, they didn't have... And by mud dice, I mean these things were made out of cheap plastic. They came with, like, the original sets of D&D and whatnot. I mean, really cheap plastic. Plastic that was almost rubber. And they wore out quickly, and the edges would round off them, and the corners would round off them, and that kind of stuff. But one of the features, and I say features with air quotes around it, was that you had to fill in the numbers with a crayon. They were nice enough to supply the crayon in most cases. But you could do it in such a way that the amount of crayon you put on certain faces was not the same as the amount of crayon you put on other faces, thereby weighting the dice to one number or another, depending on how you did it. I don't know if you ever experienced that one, Andy.
I've seen it and heard of it, but I mean, it's, I don't know, it's beyond me to do something like that, because it's really not that important. It's a game. It's, you're playing it to enjoy it and have fun, and it's really frustrating and aggravating to see somebody at the table cheating. So it's,
right.
It's just in bad form.
Right. Yeah, again, if you feel like you have to do that, then maybe you need to re-examine your reasons for playing the game, and maybe you need to not play anymore. Because clearly something has gone wrong somewhere. and you have some issues that you need to resolve. So anyway, that's kind of... You know, this could be a bigger topic, this cheating with dice thing, but really we don't want to give you any clues on how to do it. Not that you would, Gamer Nation. But we do want you to be aware that it does occur and that there are people who will try it. Our next little bit of topic here is choosing which dice to roll. Now, I realize I just went through this whole thing where I told you it doesn't really matter how lucky you think the dice are, they're not going to roll any different. While those might be the reasons from reality, the reasons from the personal and psychological point of view are far different.
Oh, yes.
There are some dice you're going to like better than others. First off, you always want to roll a new pair of dice just to see how they're going to go. And once they've, you know, failed you, you'll set them aside and go back to the old trusted pair that you used to have. But one of the things, and this kind of goes back to what you were talking about with people who are buying out of the bucket of dice and whatnot. I've seen gamers, and I've done it myself, they will sit down at a table before the game starts, and they will pull out every D20 they have. And starting with the one on the left, they'll roll it. And they'll roll the next one, 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 roll the next one. Any of them that come up with a 20, they will take and say, I'm playing with these today. And the rest go back in the bag.
Which is silly, because everybody knows you've already burned those dice out.
That's right. You just wasted the only 20 you're going to get in the entire game. Yep. That's why I tend to use the opposite method. Any of them that rolled a 1, I'll pull out and... And then,
yes, because the next one to come up is going to be opposite of it. So
that's right. That's right. It's rolled its 1. It will not fail me. Not so much. And this is just silliness, really. I mean, people choose them for a variety of reasons. For example, my stainless or my aircraft aluminum dice, I will not roll in a game. And there's a number of reasons for this. One, they don't roll well. Two, they're so heavy they will pockmark whatever they're rolled upon. And my third reason is I really only have them to show off. You know, and I bought it for a specific reason, because I used to know a guy who would come into my store, and he would sit there and yap and yap and yap about how cool his dice were and how they were so much better than everybody else's dice, etc., 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 etc. So I special ordered in for myself the aircraft aluminum dice and plunked those down on the table in front of him and said, now, there, shut up. I mean, he would literally go on for 15, 20 minutes about how cool his dice were and how much cooler they were than everybody else's.
Yeah, in the end, they're just little colored cubes or octagons or rectagonals.
Rectagonals, yeah.
Rectagonals.
Triangulums.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, so choosing which dice to roll is just kind of a little bit of silliness that most gamers engage in. And remember, this is dice culture, okay? So this is the show's theme is dice culture, and part of that dice culture is the method by which you choose which dice you roll. And it really doesn't make any difference. You can go with any method you like. However, the one thing you cannot skip, the one step that must be performed, we're going to refer to as dice prep. Your dice have to be primed and ready to go. You cannot just pull cold dice out of a bag and start rolling them.
Gotta warm them up.
It doesn't work. They need to be warm. Just like a guy who's going to jog around a track, he's got to do some stretches and some warm-ups before he does it, or he's just going to cramp up and roll ones. there's a variety. The repeated rolling where you dump them out and you start rolling handfuls and handfuls and handfuls about five or six times till they look like they're all ready to go and warmed up and feeling happy and looking good, and they just want to jump right out there and critical hit on that ogre right away. And then there's the dice that are kind of, I didn't really get enough sleep last night kind of dice. I think I'm only going to roll fives. Just fives today. I don't really feel like working. I'm going to go back in the bag, go to bed.
And that's where they go.
And that's where they go. You know, you have other people who, as part of their dice culture, will stack the dice up so that the 20's on the bottom, and then you got the 12 on top, and then the 8, and then, you know, all the way up till they got the pointy 4 at the top. And then, you know, see how long they'll stay like that or until somebody knocks them over. You got guys who like to just rub them in their hands over and over and you know, get them nice and actually feeling warm. They'll sit there and do this, and it'll be great. And, you know, dice prep is whatever you make of it. It's just one of the fun little things that you will encounter as you observe and participate with gamers. In aid of dice prep is what we like to call adding luck to the dice. There are a number of methods with which to do this. One of them is the kind of bag you keep them in. Apparently, Crown Royale bags have more luck per square inch than any other sort of dice container.
They do. They really do.
Yeah.
It's the purple and gold theme going on there.
Every gamer I know has at one time or another had at least one Crown Royale bag. And it's usually just chock full of dice, like you wouldn't believe. There'll be 40 or 50 dice in there. Another method of adding luck to dice is what we call the fame rub. Let's say somewhere back in the big bad days of gaming, you got Gary Gygax to sign your copy of D&D. And you witnessed him do this. Well, sir, you can take your dice and you can rub them on that signature, and that is guaranteed to increase the luck of the dice.
Yes, that is a crit waiting to happen.
But only if you rub them from left to right. That makes the dice roll higher. If you go from right to left, you're making the dice roll lower. So it's vitally important before you start this ritual to know what kind of system you're gaming in. Because if you've rubbed your dice higher and the game system is a roll below system, you've screwed your dice. And I will point and laugh.
And he will.
I will. I do it all the time. Ask Andy. Pointing, laughing, it's my specialty.
He's cornered the market on it.
That's right. Another good way of adding luck to dice is to find the die that you believe rolls critical hits more often than any other die. The one that comes up 20 so often, it's almost a miracle the others haven't kicked you out for cheating. And put that in a bag with dice that are rolling low. But be careful. Because while the other dice may roll higher from then on, having learned the important lessons that your good die has to teach them, there is a counter effect as well, where your good die will pick up bad habits from the other die. And he will begin to roll lower. In fact, you might say both sets approach the middle of their range.
Yes, and unless you make the mistake of putting multiples of bad dice in with that one good one, then it just sucks all the luck out of it.
That's right.
You've got nothing.
That's right. I would say never put more than four in at a time. Five seems to be stretching it a bit. Six is no way. You're going to lose them both. Another method of adding luck to dice is to actually have your dice touched by somebody famous. Not just somebody George Clooney famous. Somebody in the gaming world famous. Everybody knows that adds at least five to any roll off of that dice for the next week.
Oh yeah, at least.
At least.
But the thing of it is, you've got to use them. You can't tuck them away in the dice bag, because when you pull them out, it's, you know, the juju is gone.
That's right. You have to be ready to use. Since the most obvious place to get somebody game famous to touch your dice is at a convention, use them that day.
Yes.
In a game. That's the only way it's going to work. Lesser methods of adding luck to dice involve blowing on them, especially if you've just had an onion bagel. Or anything with garlic. Or you just haven't brushed recently. Everybody knows all this does is melt the edges, thereby causing your dice to go bad. So now, if you've recently brushed your teeth, or you've just had a mint, or you've had something with cinnamon on it, then you're probably okay. You can go ahead and blow on those dice, and it might add a point or two to the roll. That'll be fine.
Yes, if you can get a minty fresh roll out of it, it's all the better.
That's right. We've all seen this in casinos, you know, the big casino movie. The guy will be ready to roll craps and blow on the dice, or have the cute girl next to him blow on the dice, and throw him out on the table. Oh, my God, he got what he wanted. Yeah, I guess it works.
Well, it does in the movies.
Yeah, it does in the movies. So if your gaming is scripted, go for it. If you can look up and the thing in front of you is a movie camera, go for it. Otherwise, this method is not really all that well recommended. Can you think of any other methods of adding luck to dice there, Mr. Andy?
Well, I generally rubbing them up against a girl gamer tends to...
Well, rubbing anything up against a girl gamer tends to either get you slapped or...
Usually it does, and you have to be stealthy about it. You can't just walk up and you rub my dice for me. You got to be sneaky about it, you know. Kind of, yes, I loved it. Oh, pardon me, didn't mean to bump into you. Oh, got my dice rubbed on. So yeah, it's all in the technique. Yeah.
Why was Andy arrested at the con? He was getting a luck rub.
My D20.
Horrible. We all know girl gamers don't exist anyway, so that's a... Yeah,
yeah, it's a fallacy.
No, I won't comment. No, 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 no. No. All right, so there are some very... Once you've got all your dice luck plugged in and you've picked out the right dice to roll and you've all the stuff we've been talking about so far, there are some very definite do's and don'ts in the world of dice and games. Number one, the prime rule, the prime directive, if you will, of dice. Do not touch my dice. Ever. For any reason. Because your bad luck will rub off on my dice and they won't work.
It's an instantaneous type of thing. It's a power sap, and it just is gone.
I have seen people hit over this one. I mean, literally hit.
Yeah. With a bag of dice, usually.
Yeah. Just don't do it. Somebody's die comes rolling across the table at you. Don't resist that urge. Don't pick it up for them. Don't hand it to them. They will get it themselves, and they won't mind a bit. You will cause more problems by picking it up and handing it to them than you will by just letting them get it themselves. That's what they want to do anyway. And for God's sake, if you're in the middle of the game and you reach out and you accidentally touch somebody else's dice, thinking they're your own, and start to roll them, please duck under the table as quickly as you can. Because that individual will come after you, and not nicely. And we all know that the only suitable punishment for somebody who has touched your dice is the walk of 1,000 four-siders. It's where you take the little four-sided pyramid-shaped dice, you throw them on the floor, And somebody has to walk over them in their bare feet.
Yes. Commonly known as caltrops.
That's right. Gamer caltrops. So avoid touching. People are really sensitive about this, seriously. And unreasonably so. But avoid as much as possible touching another person's dice. It causes more problems than it's worth.
Yeah. In miniature gaming, I haven't seen it to be as much of a problem because it's mostly just dice sixes.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's got a whole table full of them. But when it comes down to role-playing games, people tend to be very protective, defensive, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
odd about their dice. So,
yeah. Remember, the dice are magic. Your life is not.
Yeah. Exactly.
One of the other things, do you have an area in front of you at the table? This area is encompassed approximately by the width of your shoulders and the reach of your arms. So if you stick your arm out in front of you, that's the area you have to roll your dice in. There's no reason your dice should go jumping across the table. You have been overly enthusiastic if your dice go jumping across the table. If your dice roll into your neighbor's dice pile, you have been overly enthusiastic. Try to keep your die rolls in front of you. And this is really actual advice here, folks. Try to keep the dice in front of you. If they get up on the board, there's a chance that they're going to knock over a piece or move things around, or they're going to, you know, roll out onto the floor, or just, you know, mess with things they shouldn't be messing with. It really is best if you try to keep those dice going in front of you. There are two other etiquette things we want to talk about, and one of them is how to deal with cocked dice. You roll a die, it lands up against a book, or it lands up against a playing piece, or whatever, and it doesn't quite settle onto one side or another. It lands on an edge, we'll say. What do you recommend they do, Andy?
The easiest thing to do is pick it up and re-roll it.
Yep. That's the easiest and best.
And that's just the easiest and quickest thing to do, just re-roll it. Some people will argue that if, say, it's a die six, if you can stack another die six on top of it and they don't fall over, the roll is good. However, if the die rolls off, then you re-roll the die. To avoid all that, just pick it up and re-roll it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just a die roll. It's not life or death. It's a game.
And if you're in doubt, I mean, say, like, it's just a little bit tipped. It's like on a sheet of paper and it's just barely uneven. If you're in doubt, ask. Do you guys want me to re-roll that? If they do, you pick it up happily and you say, okay, no problem, and re-roll it. If they don't, then you got the result, you know, the dice rolled.
Yeah.
Okay? But on the whole, and especially if you're gaming with people you do not know, a cocked dice must be re-rolled. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's going to save a whole lot of heartache. What about if dice go off the table? You've rolled them, and they've leapt free of their bonds and gone straight off the table onto the floor.
Well, then you have to get a dice wrangler and have them brought back under control,
yep.
Possibly tranquilized, mm-hmm. subdued, and brought back up onto the table, and re-rolled.
Yeah. Dice on the floor do not count for anything. The game is not taking place on the floor, usually. If the game is taking place on the floor, then fine. You can keep the dice down there. Most times, game occurs on the table. If the dice goes on the floor, that means somebody can't see it. If they can't see it, they can't verify your die roll. And believe me, you could be the best friends in the world, and they are still going to verify your dice roll, even if they don't say anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, that die that's on the floor cannot stand. Even if it rolls a 20, it does not stand. Because equally as often it'll roll a 1, and that won't stand either. Nobody's going to hold you to that, provided you pick that die up every single time it hits the floor and re-roll it on the table. I don't care how old you are. I've had little children say, can I keep the one that rolls on? Nope. Get it up here on the table where the game is. That's where the dice belong. So make sure you roll them there. If they go off, pick them up, re-roll them. Every time. Don't care how good or bad the roll was, you just re-roll it.
Yeah.
Now, once you've assimilated all these little bits of dice culture and whatnot, you can start looking for fancier dice. And there are two companies primarily that produce fancy dice. Well, I say fancy. They're not. One of them isn't really fancy. He just claims that they're all better than everybody else's. A gentleman by the name of Lou Zaki produces Zaki dice. In fact, he is the inventor of the Zakihedron, which is the official name of the 100-sided die that never stops. He claims his dice are better because they are more tightly controlled during their manufacture, that they are much more regular in measurement than the competitors, and that they generally all around produce much better rolls than your average die. In fact, he even goes so far as to make the claim that up to 75% of all character deaths are due to poorly made dice.
Now, it couldn't possibly be from the fact that the dwarven fighter kicked in the door to the ogre stronghold by himself.
Right. While I'm sure Mr. Zaki makes a very fine die, and that it does have its qualities to recommend it, I would say that 100% of character deaths are due to stupidity. Every time.
And, that or a vengeful GM.
Yeah, that or a vengeful GM, which is stupid. it's a nice claim. Oh my god, that character, if he'd only rolled one higher, he'd be alive now. Well, no, if he'd taken the entire party with him when he kicked in the door, he'd be alive. Yeah, Leroy Jenkins.
Aggro.
Yeah. So, yeah, Mr. You know, and he does make some interesting dice. I will grant him that. Even his regular dice look pretty good. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, buying his dice versus somebody else's. And I'm not telling you not to buy his dice, but just be aware that randomness and probability occur over a much larger sample size than you're ever going to get just playing a few games.
As a credit to him as a marketing guru for this type of thing, he's playing on the superstitions of gamers.
Oh, absolutely.
These dice are better than those because, you know, we have, you know, better quality control and you know, tighter manufacturing standards and whatever. No, it's still a dice in the end. Yeah. Yes, it might be shinier than the other ones, it might be prettier, and they may indeed roll better, but at some point, they're going to roll just as bad as any other die in production. So, mm-hmm.
Yes, and I've seen his videos and whatnot where he demonstrates why his dice are so much better than everybody else's, and I can't bring myself to care. If you like his dice, buy his dice. If you don't like his dice, don't buy his dice. That's what it comes down to. I mean, everything else is just marketing. The other one that you'll run across is, as I was mentioning before, Crystal Cast. They make a line of dice that are quite extraordinary. They make the gemstone dice, which is not a description of color or pattern. It's a description of what they actually are made out of. And I'm looking it up right now because I want to make sure I get this right.
Now, does Crystal Cast make those, or is it Dwarven Forge?
Well, no, it's Crystal Cast.
Is it Crystal Cast?
It's
okay.
Crystal Cast. They make what they call Dwarven Metal and Dwarven Stone dice. The Dwarven, and I'm looking at it right now, you've got like brushed steel in the Dwarven Metal, you've got brass, you've got copper, a whole bunch of different styles of dice, various metals and whatnot. And these really are made out of steel and brass and copper. They're also upwards of $30 a set.
Yeah, and that's for the small scale dice. That's for like, I think it's a 12 millimeter scale versus I think 16 millimeter is what the standard.
Well, they're
are.
Definitely small little dice. They are 12 millimeter. If these things roll under into a shag carpet or something like that, you will lose them. Yeah. They will be gone. They're very small, very hard to see. Well, not very hard to see, but very, very hard to follow when they're rolling, all that kind of stuff. And then you've got the Dwarven Stones that Crystal Cast does, which are obsidian and jasper and aventurine and all kinds of, you know, quartz and all this other stuff, hematite and jade. And these are also $30 a pop, and they're also 12 millimeters. And you will pay your $30, and I've done this because I have a set of them somewhere. You will pay your $30 and you will look at what comes out of the package into your hand and go, oh, those aren't what I wanted at all.
Yeah.
They're tiny. They're just too small to be of any use for anything other than bragging rights.
Yeah, and they do make full-size dice, but you are, in most cases, doubling, sometimes even tripling the cost of the small sets.
Yeah.
And I know at one point they had made some out of meteorite.
Oh, yes, I'm looking at them right now, in fact.
At that one, yeah. And those were, what, upwards of $100 for a set of dice, I think it was?
No. They don't sell them in sets.
You have to buy them individually.
They are $100 a pop per dice.
Mother of pearl.
I'm looking at a D6 meteorite dwarven stone. $100.
Wow.
12 millimeter.
For the 12 millimeter?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's no way.
Yeah. The 14 millimeter D20 meteorite dwarven stone is $200.
That sucker better roll 20s all day long.
Yeah, they even have some apparently made out of fossilized dinosaur bones for $60 a pop. Mammoth ivory, which I'm not even really certain they can sell that way.
Yeah, that... even though it's from an extinct animal, ivory's still illegal, so...
I mean... Well, maybe or maybe not. I'm not sure about that. I know virgin ivory can't be done that way. But anyway, the thing is, these dice, I would never roll them at $100 a pop. I would never let them things hit the table. They would sit on a shelf somewhere. People would walk by and go, "Ooh, what's that made out of?" And I'd go, "Oh, that's made out of meteorite." Ha ha ha. And that'd be about the extent of their use.
Yeah, they would be in a non-breakable glass display case. So
yeah. They're purely for bragging rights.
Yeah.
There's not one reason in the world to own a set of those other than to show them off. So, yeah, there's some options for some high-end. I mean, if you really want to fork out the money for it, then by all means, go for it. Do what you want. But I just don't see the need to buy dice that are that expensive. Because yeah. I just don't ever think I would use them. And maybe somebody out there will, but I wouldn't.
Well, I know I've got quite a few sets of dice, and most gamers do, but I think as a general rule, I think $15 is probably the most I've ever spent on just a general set of gaming dice.
Yeah, the aluminum ones were, I think, $16 at the time I bought them, and that's the most I've paid for dice for any reason.
Yeah. On average, if you go through Chessex, the really high-end dice are going to run you about $10 a set.
Yeah.
For a standard set of gaming dice. Kaplow dice tend to be a little bit cheaper, but only maybe by a dollar or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you will roll just as well with those as you will with a $100 die or anything else. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but one of the things gamers do is collect dice. Just because it's like a symbol of what we do. You know, especially if you're a role player, it becomes a symbol of the fact that I have a ton of dice. I am a role player. I whip out a box like my little fishing tackle box with the dice in it, and people know right away, here's a guy who's serious about playing role-playing games or, you know, other games. It's kind of the way it works. It's a badge of honor.
Yeah, and depending on what kind of game I'm playing, I'll change up my dice. I'll change up the colors. I'll change up the manufacturer. It just comes down to what I feel like using.
Yeah.
It's not because one set rolls better or worse than another set. They all, you know, they're all pretty average. Because like you say, in the grand scheme of things, it covers a very wide range before things start to add up to whether they roll bad or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically, just find a set of dice you like and use them and enjoy using them. Keep in mind, this was kind of a lighthearted little look at dice culture and things that gamers do with their dice and how it all works. And I'm sure we've missed some of your favorite little quirks and whatnot. But on the whole, just enjoy your game and play it with equipment you like using. That's what it comes down to.
Oh. on the table.
Hey, we got a game in this week. For really reals. That makes this a week full of awesome. Really?
A week full of awesome.
Yes, indeed. Well, I mean, you consider the last couple, three or four casts, we really haven't had much opportunity to play anything.
No, it's been a thin couple of weeks. The holidays have kind of fouled things up, and we're just now starting to get back into the scheme of it.
Yes. So tell us, oh Captain, my Captain, what did we play this week?
We played Last Night on Earth.
Hey, that sounds cool. What's it about?
It is about zombies and trying to not get eaten by them.
Hey. Zombies. I know a good zombie joke. What do vegetarian zombies want?
I don't know.
Grains.
Oh, God. Oh, Gamer Nation, why? Why? Oh, no. Oh. Wipe a tear from my eye.
So tell me about this Last Night on Earth. What do you do? How's it played?
Well, you can play with a number of players. I think it's 2 to 4, maybe even 2 to 6. You usually have at least one, possibly two people that can play as zombies, and the rest of the players get to play as the hapless victims.
Hapless.
Hapless.
They have been de-happed.
At least our characters appeared to be hapless.
You guys appeared to be meat.
Oh, look, what's it say on my Levi's? Rump roast. Here you go. Have a bite. Gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting little game. You start out with depending on your scenario, you've got a town square, as it were, which turns out to be a well in the middle of the game.
The most pathetic town square ever. It's a broken down well. Woohoo!
Yeah, look, little Bobby fell down the well. it was. on the flip side of that, there's a I think it's like a large mansion or something that you can play some of the missions out of, and I believe it's got six or eight corner pieces that you randomly draw from.
I think it's six,
to build around that square, and that's where the rest of your buildings and your play area comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what character you have, your character either starts in a building, if the building is so marked on your player card. If you do not have that on your card, you're character gets stuck out in the middle of nowhere next to the well.
At the well.
And then the zombies get placed on little X marker spot zombie breeding grounds. And as it would happen, my character had no less than 3 zombies pop up behind her on turn 1.
Yeah, because you your character was the nurse.
Yes.
Nurse, huge tracts of land.
Yes, nurse appendages.
Yeah, and
she started in the hospital, and lo and behold, 3 spaces away from her was a red X.
Yep, and that's where 3 zombies decided to start. I can't imagine why they did that.
I have no idea. I think it was because, you were playing the zombies.
Oh, yeah!
And she had a pocket full of wheat bread or something with the...
Oh, no, that woman was no vegetarian.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So basically, within turn 1, I waltzed right over to you and took a big old chomp out of you.
Yeah, that was fun. You start out with no weapons.
Mm-hmm.
No means to defend yourself other than punching, kicking, and squealing like a little girl, which I wound up doing because both my characters were women.
Mm-hmm.
That was about it.
No weapons, which also translates into no cards in your hand at the start of the game.
Yeah, I thought that was a little lopsided. It seemed like it was really heavily in favor of the zombies. Player got to draw
4
cards at the beginning of the turn, and subsequently each turn after that, the the only way to get cards for your characters is to go in and search a building. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you've got to, you know, traverse through the game, avoiding zombies and getting into this place. And the idea behind the game is to kill a number of zombies.
Well, in the scenario we played, it was the basic
scenario.
Yeah,
in that particular scenario, the basic scenario was to kill, I think it was 9 zombies.
15.
Was it 15 zombies?
It was 15, yeah.
Oh, wow, we didn't have a chance.
No, not at all. And you have to do all this before sundown. Each turn of the game advances the sundown marker closer towards, well, sundown.
Yeah, I think you had, 15 turns to kill 15 zombies?
Something like that, yeah.
It was haphazard at best, and it was a...
Yeah, the particular scenario we played, there were 3 game-ending scenarios. One was the humans killing 15 zombies. One was if the sundown marker gets all the way to sundown, the game ends and the zombies win. And the other one was for the zombies to take out any 2 of the player characters.
Yes. Yeah. And I believe it was my 2 characters that died.
Nailed them both.
Got them both. Yeah, it's I'll definitely play it again. It just... I think it'll come down to the scenarios and hopefully, you know, maybe getting some starting items or something like that. You know, at least a fountain pen or something would have come in handy.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing that kind of... And I can kind of see why they did it this way, because the zombies don't move a lot on their turn if they don't have the cards for it.
Right.
But zombies can go right through walls.
Yeah.
So everything becomes a straight line.
They don't bother with doors or windows or anything. They just push their way through the plaster. And, oh, look, they've got you.
Yeah. Of course, having broken through the walls, the good guys cannot then go through the walls. They still have to use the door.
Yes, they are still bound by the laws of physics and cannot go through walls.
Yeah. And I think we should mention the other thing that comes with the game that really has virtually nothing to do with the gameplay.
The wonderful soundtrack they provided?
Yeah, the wonderful, wonderful soundtrack. I'm looking since I happen to have access to it.
Oh!
Yeah, it's the soundtrack is... Man, it's okay.
It's okay. And
It's a CD with like 15 songs on it that are supposed to help set the mood for the game and whatnot. You're supposed to like play it in the background and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's okay, I suppose, if you've never really paid any attention to zombie music. I'm gonna give you a short sample of the first one here. Hang on a second. And that's basically what it is. The entire soundtrack is a lot of one-handed piano playing, a lot of synthesizers, and eventually on, I would say, there's 11 tracks. Okay, so 11 tracks. On 10 of the 11 tracks, you have a female vocalist doing the Star Trek theme.
That's a very good description of it.
Yeah. And you know, that's just that kind of thing all over again. Every time. And yeah, like I said, it's all right, I suppose. But I was able to find, I don't know, 12 or so songs just in my personal music collection that would have fit much better than those did.
It's a neat idea. I gotta admit, it's. I've played a few role-playing games, and some of the GMs had a full-on soundtrack that went along with the game, and it really added a lot to it.
Yeah, but I found the music on this thing to be more of a distraction than anything else.
Yeah, it came across to me as poorly done video game music.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't like MIDI files or anything like that, but it was clearly heavily synthesized.
Yeah, it's... It adds an interesting element to the game that I haven't seen with any other board game like that.
Right.
And it's a nicely put together game. It's from I believe it's Flying Frog Productions.
Yeah, Flying Frog Productions.
Very much on par with I would say Fantasy Flight games as far as the amount of bits that you get with a game.
Yeah.
All the cards are of a nice quality. The character cards and the game boards and stuff are a very heavy cardboard game material. It's got different colored zombies that you can use. It's got the characters, and they're made of the kind of rubbery plastic, but they're nicely cast, and it's a well done game. It's just that the soundtrack wasn't as good as it could have been. But
on the whole, I enjoyed the actual gameplay.
It was pretty good. We'll have to break that one out again.
Right, try some of the different scenarios and whatnot.
Yeah,
that'll be fun. And then there was something else you actually did this week, so I'll let you talk about it again.
Well, yeah, one of the new websites that we've been kind of pimping here on the webcast is the robotviking.com,
right.
And that is a source for gaming-related news on the Internet. Well, the guys there that run the website are in the process of making a set of rules for an automobile combat game, I guess on par with the Steve Jackson Car Wars type of thing.
Right.
And their working name at the moment is Death Race, which that, of course, will change because that's all copyrighted through the movies. But they're looking at doing a simple set of rules using Hot Wheels scale cars and being able to add armor and weapons and different attributes to the cars and making it playable from a standpoint from the player being able to do all this kind of stuff. Anybody that's played Car Wars and that has tried to implement homebrew rules to custom-built cars knows that it turns into a mathematical and logistical nightmare.
Yeah, not that we know anybody who tried to do
nobody.
Rule set. For hours and hours. It should be noted, I did come up with a system for doing it, and one that made sense. But it was just hugely complicated to try to implement it
It just didn't flow the way it should, and I'm hoping the guys at Robot Viking will be able to pull this off. Check their website because this is going to be an open alpha test on this. So anybody that goes to their website is going to be able to download these rules and test this out. And so we're looking forward to getting on the ground floor of this and running with it because I've been wanting to play something like this, and I really, really have high hopes that this will be a good game.
Yeah, and you wrote to them, and they responded back, and we're happy to hear from us. And
He's Ed Grabanowski, I believe is his name. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Well, I hope you did, too, because I'm going to go look, and then I'm going to make fun of you if you didn't.
You're going to make sure.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm doing it right now. You better correct yourself soon.
Oh, I'm good. I know.
Oh, hey, how about that? You got it right.
I got it right, Chris.
Grabanowski,
yes. Yep. I wrote him an email and told him about the podcast and that we were mentioning them and that we'd really enjoy being able to get a rule set for it and play test it for him along with anybody else out there in Gamer Nation that's interested in doing it. So check out their website, and hopefully the rules will be up here in the next week or so, and give it a try.
Yep, that's robotviking.com. Hey, Andy.
Yes?
What's that around the corner?
I don't know. I can't see it.
Let's get some light on it.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Ah!
It's the end of the show!
Dear God!
I hate the end of the show. Flank it. It's stab it in the back.
Sneak attack. Backstab.
Waha! It was a monk. No, he was... Yeah. Hassan Chop!
Ah. Feel the power, Gamer Nation. Feel it. I command it. The recalcitrant minion that is Feedburner, lowly servant though it is, continues to report on subscribers. While its accuracy is still somewhat suspect, We did, in fact, peak at 113 subscribers earlier this week. Yes, Gamer Nation, we cracked 100. And we cracked it well enough to make it stick. So, to the 113 of you out there who stood up next to your fellow man and had the big brass ones to say, I listened to Game On and damn it, I like it. We say, thank you. You honor us with your presence.
Speaking of standing up and being counted, we still want your bumpers, just like GM Dave did at the front of the show. Can you spare 30 seconds to record a bumper? Then do it. Send it to us at gameon@d20radio.com. Remember, our official bumper has been chosen. I am Fiddleback, and I am a Game On minion.
Join us on the community forums at www.d20radio.com or email us at gameon@d20radio.com. We're waiting to hear from you, Gamer Nation. Let us know what you think, share your thoughts, or just hang out and be witty. It's all cool.
So until next time, Gamer Nation, game on!
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of soundsnap.com and freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
www.d20radio.com.
Yep. Adding luck to dice, an alternative method is to actually have your dice touch tight dice. I talk well.